Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food, culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. With my Below the Mason-Dixon charm, I spotlight the culture of the food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking food tribes, Cinco de Mayo cocktails with the Stand NY. If you're listening live to Hot Grease via HeritageRadioNetwork.org, we have a live call-in number. Our number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. Can you believe, folks, today is the last day of the month? I'm in shock. Where did April go? It just zipped by. Every week, you know, I bring you food headlines. And I was like thinking, what was like the number one headline around food? I couldn't come up with anything. Then I'm like, what have I been talking about the most outside of Hot Grease? And hands down, it has to be the New York Magazine article that was titled. What was the actual title of this? Let me see what's the title. It was all about Brooklyn food. The title of the article, I don't even have it here. But anyway, there's an article in New York Magazine. You can find it online and via the magazine if you actually get it hard cover. I do. The title of the article is called, Is the Brooklyn Artisanal Movement a Step Forward for Food? So my thoughts on that. Gosh, the comments were crazy. I thought it was a little bit snarky, but it did raise some great points. And I think the biggest takeaway and the thing that I've been saying for a while, that the cream is going to rise to the top. There are a lot of great folks that are producing excellent food in New York City, but it's a tough and rough business out there. So I think my prediction is that over the next 6 months to a year, a lot of folks won't make it. Sorry, folks. And you know, I'm all about local food businesses. I actually have one of the great ones in the studio today. I'm going to take a quick break. If you're listening live and you want to call in and weigh in on the topic, give us a call or tweet me. But we're going to come back and we're going to get the Stand NYC's take on Brooklyn Food Tribe. We're going to take a break. Come back shortly. Hang with us. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. If you're just tuning in, we're talking Brooklyn food tribes. And in the studio today to weigh in on the New York Times article that was posted last week is the founder, the person behind Stand NYC, Natalie Weisner. Welcome to NYC. You're the food company that focuses on art and craft of sweetness.
This is true.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
So I have to ask you the good, the bad, and the ugly of the article. Did you read it? It was long. It was lengthy,
I'll
right?
I'll be honest, Nicole. I didn't read the whole article. I sort of skimmed it. I've been so busy just trying to keep up with the flea recently since we started last month that I haven't had as much time as I want to surfing the internet and stuff. But it's interesting because I didn't know about it. And then a bunch of people, you emailed me about it and a bunch of other people emailed me being like, why weren't you in this? Why weren't you in this? And I'm sort of like, I don't know. And then I've been sort of trying to keep a low profile from the press recently. We started the company about 2 years ago and it all took off so much quicker than we ever imagined. It wasn't something we had planned out. So about the first year and a half, we spent all our time just in the kitchen producing, and just trying to make as much as possible. And it wasn't till this winter that we really had time to stop. We actually ended up taking the winter off from production, partly because we're looking into building out our own kitchen space, and we were having trouble finding a space that could accommodate us in the interim. So what we decided to do was stop producing the syrups and jams and preserves for the winter and really get a solid plan and decide what had been working, what wasn't working, what we wanted to do more of, what people liked. But I definitely don't feel excluded. I'm the opposite. I feel really bad because I have so many people calling me saying, like, when can you get us preserves? When can you get us syrups? And I just keep having to say, like, I promise.
So you didn't feel a certain way about not being in there because you're busy trying to do your
thing. I'm just busy trying to make enough lemonade for the weekends.
So let me ask you this. I mean, my question, I mean, you heard my comments earlier that I think that some of the cream is going to rise to the top.
Totally.
Do you feel like, because in mainstream media and even hyper-local media, Brooklyn kind of now is shifting where people are mocking the food
totally
scene.
Which is part of why I don't think I mind not being also I don't think I mean Brooklyn's my home and it's where my friends and you know my brother until recently had been, and it's very important to me that I source locally, and I don't think that this kind of business would have grown as quickly or successfully somewhere else. So to in that end, Brooklyn's very much a part of it, but Brooklyn's not all of it to me, and I definitely I love traveling, and that's been really important in inspiring my different products, and I definitely would love to open a stand on the West Coast eventually. So to me, I think it's bigger than Brooklyn.
Here's my last question. We're going to move on to some exciting things about the stand. The scaling up piece. I think that's really what the big thing with the article is trying to do.
Like.
And that's actually the big question that's really the next level of not only Brooklyn, but other parts of the country where people are doing small food.
Exactly.
So are there challenges? What are like the immediate challenges in scaling up?
Well, I think one of the immediate challenges is, as everyone knows, it's super expensive to live in New York City, and it's expensive to run a business here too. It's expensive to rent space. It's expensive. I don't have a car right now, so we take cabs back and forth every weekend to the Flea with our millions, tons of lemonade and, what else? I mean, there's just a lot of overhead. We're about to buy a new juicer. We've actually, for the last 2 years, we've been juicing all our citrus ourselves. I just juiced 1,500 lemons this weekend. So my arms are getting really strong, but we're getting an automated juicer.
So someone needs to solve the scaling up problem.
Well, yeah.
But actually create some models.
I think that's what's going on. I think, you know, this has all happened so fast, and all these companies have really come up very quickly, and I think people are rising up and trying to find solutions, because obviously a lot of people are having the same issues. You know, you can only produce so much by hand in X amount of time. So obviously it's a problem that people are going to hit. There are definitely a lot of like kitchen incubators coming up.
Right.
A lot of people are building out in the Pfizer building, which is one space that I'm looking at.
Cool. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk more with Natalie about the birth of the stand. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule, show archives, and a link to all of our podcasts via iTunes on heritageradionetwork.org. See, I'm saying org instead of com. We're actually a 501c3 now, so you can go to either one of them and still get to our site, but it's .org now. When I hear simple, creative, charming, and tasting, hands down, the stand, New York, is what comes to mind. We have the person, it started off as brother-sister team.
It did.
Right here on Hot Grease, chatting about evolving from a new school lemonade stand to a full-fledged business. So I have to say, I remember you guys.
You were one of our very first customers.
Yeah, in Fort Greene.
Definitely.
So how did that come about? You guys had literally had a lemonade
stand. We literally had a lemonade stand. It was totally something. I had been making these syrups and just different things I was enjoying making. I'm always sort of on some sort of different project. And I had a friend that had been having stoop sales in Fort Greene right on the park. And he came to me and was like, you've got to do this with me. You can't believe how many people are out in the neighborhood. It's so fun. You get to hang out all day, make something, and then you'll have an excuse to make something. So I went to the farmer's market, and it was last week in April of 2010, and I picked up a bunch of different things, blackberries, lavender. I got some dried hibiscus and a bunch of lemons, and went home and made some lemonade, and we set up one morning, and within a few hours, we had sold it all. I was just continuing to make. Oh, so the different flavors were blackberry lavender lemonade. That was our first one. And hibiscus.
How many lemons did you squeeze that day?
Actually, honestly, that day I didn't squeeze any. I had a friend helping me. She squeezed 100. And that originally we were doing with just a little juicer that I'd gotten for $15 at the Fleet, one of those juiceo mats, you know, from the 50s, I think.
Yeah.
Light pink. And then very soon, we scaled up to one of the bigger hand presses that you get, you know, from restaurant supply store. And then eventually, I think in the fall, we got a semi-automatic juicer.
What I like about you guys is that you're not just so focusing on syrups and you're not just jams. What's all in your product mix?
Well, it's interesting because we did the stand. We did this lemonade the one day, and we sold, I can't honestly remember how many we sold the first day, but it was clear that it was something that people were really into. So I did it again the next weekend, and we sold out right away again. And it just kept happening over the summer that it got bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where we couldn't really run it on the street, and I couldn't make it in my apartment anymore, and it was growing too fast. So I had started making these syrups also to make seltzers and cocktails with. And I went into a shop in Williamsburg and was talking to the manager about it. And he suggested that I try bottling them. And it was the fall, so I, you know, the lemonade season was ending and everyone was really into this and trying to convince me to bottle it and sell it. But, you know, I didn't know about bottling the lemonade, so I decided to bottle the syrups and these marmalades that I had started making.
Uh-huh.
But come spring again, I was really missing the lemonades, and I was missing spending time at the stand with all our neighbors and just meeting new people and having that experience, which is very different from being in a kitchen all the time manufacturing a product that you're going to drop at a store and never watch anyone consume. So I talked to Jonathan Butler from The Flea about doing the flea market, and he and Eric were very into the idea. So we started last March or April when Smorgasburg opened. And
okay, wow. I thought you had been there longer. Wow.
It seems like a long time, but it's just been a year now.
So you have the marmalades, you have the syrups, you have, what else do you have?
So yeah, we have a lot going on. We've got the lemonades, which we sell just at the Flea and Smorg.
And for people who are listening who may not be in Brooklyn, because we have folks from all over.
This is true. There are people outside Brooklyn.
Yeah, the Flea is Brooklyn Flea. We call it Brooklyn Flea for short. And then Smorgasburg, which is a shoot off of this the Flea, which is all food.
Yeah, which has gotten so much bigger this year from last year. It's just so exciting to see the response it's gotten.
So you're doing the lemonades there.
So we're doing the lemonades there. And then what we've been doing is we've been wholesaling the bottled syrups and marmalades and jams and garnishes that I make for cocktails. We've been wholesaling those to about 10 different stores around Brooklyn. We've had such interest in those, and we haven't been able to keep up with making enough for the amount.
That's what I'm into. I'm totally there. I mean, I make my own syrups at home, but I also support you guys, P&H Soda, but I'm really in love with y'all's garnishes.
Thank you. The garnishes are one of my favorite parts. I think it's something really different from what other people are making, and I have a fine arts background, so to me, the experimentation part is really what I love. I love, once I get something down to the way I think is perfect, I'm sort of like, all right, what's my next thing going to be? And that's the fun part to me. So one of those garnishes, do you know about the citrus ribbons?
Yeah.
So those are one of my favorites. Those are extremely labor intensive. Not just peeling all the lemons, but then what I do is I blanch them a few times and then I boil them in a simple syrup and then they have to sit overnight and then I boil them again and then they stay.
Oh, wow.
And then I actually roll them all by hand into those little curls.
Oh, so in my mind, I'm thinking you're taking like a fruit peeler and they're coming off by, oh, wow.
Well, that's how they're coming off, but then they're not really staying. They like flatten and they kind of like,
wow,
are big ribbony. So that is one thing I barely make any money selling that by the jar.
So what garnishes besides the lemon peels you have?
Have I been making?
That are not so, you know, that you're saying, huh, I'm making money off this.
Oh.
I can scale this up.
One thing has been candied ginger that I was making and dipping in cardamom sugar. That's gotten a really good response. Definitely, what's been interesting is that the lemonade was the first thing we started with, and then everyone got really excited about the syrups and the marmalades and all that stuff, and it seemed like the natural progression to sell that in stores and to wholesale it. But in a way, we're thinking about actually stopping most of our wholesaling, which is really hard because I have people emailing me saying, like, can't you get us more? And then I have new stores asking about it. And I have got these great relationships with all the, you know, owners and managers of these stores around. And I love coming and doing.
Why? Wow, you're like the third person in the last month that I've heard that's a small food business in Brooklyn that are stopping the wholesale. Why?
And it's tragic. It's really hard when you have all these people interested in your product and you know that people are buying it. Why are we stopping?
Yeah.
Because it's not a profitable structure.
Speaking of profit and actually doing something that's exciting and making money or a potential to make money in the future, you did a super cool event with Kinfolk Magazine.
We did an awesome event with Kinfolk Magazine. And so that was sort of part of, we got to last winter and really looked at our, you know, we had gotten it so that we were making everything as quickly as possible. I got a bunch of awesome interns who, one of them I just hired full time, was doing the market with me, and I couldn't do it without him. But even though I had people helping me that I wasn't paying for, still the labor on these products are so much higher than the lemonades that I'm making. And we were being asked to do, so we also started getting into doing cocktail catering and also spiking lemonades and doing that kind of events. And so one of the events that we did was with Kinfolk, and it was just amazing. For people,
the pictures were gorgeous, the photos.
It was such a gorgeous event. We were so excited to be part of it. It was really exciting because they got some liquor sponsors, and one of them was Art and the Age, who does the root liquor and then the ginger. And so we got to just use our products and their liquors to come up with cocktails, which was sort of an ideal playground.
Is that in the plan, the long-term business plan, to do more?
That's kind of what's going on right now. We're trying to figure out how to keep producing the products but do it in a more financially stable and
I really appreciate, as I'm talking to you, you're probably one of the first guests, and I've had a ton of people come on the show who, some of the people that were in the article in the New York Times, but you've been the first one that's been very candid and honest about, I love what I do, people support me, but shit, this is hard work.
It's really hard. It's a lot of work.
I really appreciate you being honest about
that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really cool. So you, what I do like about the stand, and I want to say this and you can comment on it, I think beyond the jam, you're not just a jam company, because there are a sea of jam companies.
Totally. That's another reason that we're thinking about stopping wholesale, is that that's such a saturated market. And that, you know, if we're thinking about, I'm getting requests from stores in California and all across the country, and, you know, it's really, on the one hand, just a different business to run, to be producing things and just sending them out. We've thought about working with co-packers, which I know a bunch of companies.
Yeah.
Like Rick's Picks, there's one that works upstate.
Beth's. And,
I believe Beth's, and I know Schoolhouse Kitchen.
Yeah.
So that was one thing we thought about. But even that was going to be a huge amount of work, overseeing that production and going upstate with our ingredients and stuff. And to me, I really thought about what it was that made me want to go from the lemonade stand to turning this into a business, which was the time I was spending with my neighbors and getting to make things and having people enjoy them and give me feedback. And that's what I love about doing the flea, despite how exhausting it is.
You get to see everyone.
If that part to us is the enjoyable part, and it's also seeming to be the more financially viable part. So right now what we're really focusing on is sort of branding the stand as like a cocktail stand and a lemonade stand for the flea and for events, and really focusing on that.
So, love it. Weddings. And speaking of cocktails, we're going to take a short break. As you know, folks, May 5th is Cinco de Mayo, and then also too Kentucky Derby. But we're going to make a Cinco de Mayo cocktail with Natalie right after the break. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Lovely lady, pretty as can be. No one knows her name, she's just a mystery. I have seen her maybe once or twice. One thing I can say is she's very nice. She's a lady, what I really want to know. Somehow I've got to let my feelings show. Fresh as a summer breeze, she'll take you by.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is executive produced by Jack Inslee and myself, and today we're being engineered by Joe. Joe, you know I'm gonna mess your last name up. Joe G.
Joe G, that works.
Okay. And let me give a Southern Girls hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Okay, celebration time. Right. You need some ideas for May 5th, a.k.a. Cinco de Mayo, or even Kentucky Derby. Listen up, listen up. So we're going to make in-house a what cocktail are we gonna make in town?
I don't actually have a name for this cocktail yet.
Oh, okay.
It's sort of like a spin on a margarita with hibiscus and ginger in it.
Okay. And then before we make that, let's talk about mint juleps, the ingredients for mint juleps.
So I really did want to make a mint julep. One thing was I didn't have a silver cup to serve
it
to. So that sort of was the first hurdle. And then I just didn't have time to make the mint syrup.
It's all good. Cinco de Mayo is good. I wonder how many people, I only know one place is doing something for Kentucky Derby, and shout out to Seersucker Brooklyn. I don't know if you know
them.
He's doing something on Saturday, but everyone else probably will be all in Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty good holiday.
So ingredients for Kentucky Derby, I mean, not Kentucky Derby, for mint julep.
Oh, yeah, for mint julep is traditionally, well, there's different ways of making it. Some people make it with fresh mint and sort of muddle it, and some make a mint simple syrup and then mix that with bourbon.
But I think the key, just like you said before, is having the silver.
I think it is, too.
And the ice.
And the ice and the sprig of mint.
Yes, that is the key to a mint julep. But let's move on to Cinco de Mayo. Okay. We're going to call this the we got to give this a name.
Maybe I know.
You can name it after me. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It could be the Nicole Taylor. You got to taste it first.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start off.
Okay. So here I've got my, do you like my cocktail strainer?
I got this. Yeah. Where'd you get that from?
Got this at the flea.
I love that. That is gorgeous. You guys have to see this cocktail strainer. It's, the top is like gold and it has this embossed something.
I think it's from, I don't know, the 50s maybe.
Gorgeous. I love that it has this little top.
I know, it's really perfect.
This little. So we have ice.
Okay, we've got ice and we've got our ingredients. So as everyone knows, I really love lemon. I put it in almost every drink I make. So right here, the ingredients are, I said that, but this has got lime juice, not lemon. So I've got lime juice, grapefruit juice, and orange juice that I just juiced before I came over. And then I have my hibiscus syrup and my ginger syrup.
Okay.
And some Patron.
Okay, so top shelf tequila all the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because girl,
I think it makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference. A huge difference. Okay.
Okay, so
We need basically four for your cocktail for the Stand NYC Cinco de Mayo margarita. You basically need three different juices and two syrups.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, so, and it's a super simple ratio. It's just an ounce of each of them.
Cool. So Natalie is pouring in the jigga. That's
the orange juice right there.
So you hear the orange juice going into this 1950s. That's the grapefruit juice. 1 ounce.
1 ounce of this.
Going in. And then an ounce of lime.
An ounce of lime. Actually, I'm sorry. It's 2 ounces of the Patron. Of the juice and the syrups, it's all an ounce. And then
2 ounces of Patron. So wait a minute. Okay, the syrup has all. I was like, whew, boy, yep. That's kind of okay. So are we doing an ounce each of the
Of the juices and the syrups.
Okay. So this is layered flavors. I love layered flavors.
I'm very into layered flavors.
So where can folks find your ginger syrup?
Well, that's the problem. Right now, it's not on the market. We're trying to figure out where it's going to pop up next.
So ginger syrup. And
hibiscus syrup.
And then hibiscus. So we need to, we should plan some kind of cocktail party.
Definitely. Definitely.
Here it is, folks. Right. Oh, man. Have I had lunch? I don't know if I can try this. Oh, Lord. Here we go.
All right. Now, can I have a glass?
Sure.
Maybe throw a little ice on it.
Whoops. We have some issues here.
I love those big ice cubes, though. Those are great.
Roberta's ice cube.
Nice.
Here we go. On-air demo. I love on-air demo.
Yeah, this is fun. Did you see the video we did with Shannon Mustiver?
Shannon! Oh, look. Shannon, that's my girl.
I know. I could not bring Shannon up.
How could we not? Shannon's been on the show before.
Shannon is really...
For folks who don't know, Shannon is really... I would call her the Brooklyn Bed-Stuy cocktail food expert.
I would say
I
that,
I love
too.
Shannon. The video is great. It's on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys have any other... videos on YouTube?
My brother, actually, there's one that Jake, my brother, made when we first started the stand, about the stand on the street.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So where can folks find you again? We stay at the Brooklyn Flea.
So we're at the Flea every weekend. You should definitely email us if you have any questions. You know, we do events. We're going to be doing Rockaway Beach. We're going to be doing...
Oh!
That's another... I mean,
oh
we have
gosh.
So much going on. It's sort of, it's one big thing after another. We're going to do a lemonade cart at Rockaway Beach.
Oh, that's
super
cool.
We're so excited about it. There's so many other awesome food people.
Yeah, I think Roberta's is usually out there.
Yeah, Roberta's is going to be there. Vinegar Hill House is who's running the whole thing.
Yeah. Vinegar Hill House last year, they had like these cod sandwiches, a fried fit. It was good. Yeah.
Oh,
I was there last year. So you're going to be at their Smorgage.
The Flea. We're thinking next year we'll probably apply for a spot at the Highline because it seems sort of like an optimal lemonade spot.
Without a doubt.
One thing for that is, as I said before, I'm a visual artist. So to me, like, infusing as many different creative things into what I'm doing is really important, and I want to find somebody, maybe a former Pratt student, to build us a cart for.
Yeah, I can totally visualize that. I mean, you guys are the new age grown up lemonade stand.
Totally.
Natalie, thank you so much. I'm actually really honored for your honesty and coming on Hot
Grease. Yeah, no problem.
Thank you, folks, for listening. If you want to reach out to, reach out to Natalie. She is on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. I'm really bad at updating Facebook, but I'm on that as well.
The Stand NY.
Yes.
All right, folks. Thank you for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can join me here every Monday live at 3:30. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Sometimes I'm right, and I can be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The preacher, the banker, the drummer, and then makes no difference what group I'm in.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.